everyone. Welcome back to Blog Talk Radio, Coaching with Carrie Live. There's been a little bit of a break due to some travel that I've been doing, and it is back. So every Friday at 11 a.m. Central Standard Time, I'm going to be doing a live coaching session once again, and we are going to be finishing up the second part of the series that I've been doing, which is customer service and value pricing, delivering customer value, enhancing your value, and getting paid what you're worth. Of course, that's what you want, right? We just finished up with the customer service portion of this in my last session. And remember, if you did not follow along earlier in the month and last month in terms of these sessions, you can go back and listen to any of them. They're recorded, and they're right on Coaching with Carrie here on Blog Talk Radio. You can just go to www.coachingwithcarrie.com. It'll bring you right to the page, and then you can listen to any of the past recorded sessions. They're 20 to 30 minutes long, easy to listen to on your drive or quick in the morning or evening to start out your day or end it correctly. And so go back and look and listen to what we talked about in this customer service portion of it. I'm telling you that it's so important for you to deliver customer service at a high level and understand customer value. And now we're going to start talking about also value pricing, because that's the second part of this, right? How do you continue to create raving fans in your business? How do you continue to create referrals and repeat business, which is truly the foundation of any business? And you do it through a couple of ways. You do it through the customer service and enhancing customer value, but also how do you get paid what you're worth at the same time? And that's what we're going to start talking about. So when we were talking about customer service in the past episodes, we learned about the four components of delivering value to your customers through the services that you offer and deliver. And when you can deliver great value in your service and articulate that value to your clients, well, then your customers will focus on your service rather than your price, right? And there are some customers, however, for whom price will always be a major issue. And for this reason, the second part of this series is going to be about delivering customer value covers value pricing. And value pricing, what we're going to start talking about is the value you as the real estate professional provide to your customers. You're going to learn how to obtain more appointments and more listings without compromising your commission rate. That sounds good, right? And we'll also talk about ways to compete against discount companies who strategically position themselves as the quote-unquote lower price option. So how we're going to do that is we're going to go into looking at the key elements and understanding the real estate market first and foremost, and then examining industry perceptions and realities, and then we'll discuss flexible pricing strategies and how to strategically position yourself so that you can help maintain and increase your share of the real estate market. So let's move into today the understanding of the real estate markets. Okay, so recent, there's been market changes. There's always market changes. There's always shifts in the market, right? And it requires a successful realtor to be very savvy about pricing and marketing issues. Many people are entering the real estate profession. They're greatly increasing competition for customers, right? And we know that. In the last few years, as the market has gotten better, more and more people are getting into our industry. So there is increasingly more competition for you as a professional real estate agent. The real estate industry has received obviously national media attention and generated consumer and investor interest and investment throughout the years. And alternative pricing models have had an impact on the overall market as well. You're probably seeing that in your market just as we are here in the Twin Cities. So internet-based real estate companies provide alternate methods of access to real estate information rather than the traditional method of working with an agent to find properties, or at least at the beginning, right? There's discount services out there that have positioned traditional real estate companies as the high-priced option while positioning themselves as a full-service but lower-cost option. Whether that's the truth or not, we don't need to go into that, but that's how they're positioning themselves. And the media attention has increased public awareness of real estate marketing practices and pricing, and this awareness has really resulted in greater scrutiny of the real estate-related fees and services, even drawing attention at some points from the Department of Justice. So sometimes this bad PR results in greater than normal scrutiny from different entities. And the reason that they're concerned, like the Department of Justice, for example, or has been concerned in the past, is that the real estate industry generates a massive amount of money on an annual basis, and it affects millions of people and millions of jobs, right? And so alternative pricing companies claim that they were being restricted from using a price-sensitive model, which they argued would be better service and would better serve the consumer. Well, at the end of the day, the Department of Justice feels that if the company's claims are true, then consumers may not have all the options they need. So the key question is, do consumers really benefit when they work with these alternative pricing companies? That's the real question. Well, there's been a couple of studies done, and Texas A&M University sponsored and conducted an independent study of real estate transactions in the Dallas-Fort Worth market in the past. And this independent study was probably the first comprehensive research project on alternative pricing models and their effect on the real estate market as a whole that was really had ever been done. And researchers from A&M investigated differences between full service versus limited service brokers. And the study also looked into the effects of limited service representation to real estate consumers. The results of this study published in January of 2005 at the time, and so that's when it was published. There haven't been many, by the way, studies done since then, reported a number of interesting findings. And I think that really, if you look back to that market, it's a similar market to today. So probably what we're seeing today is very similar to what we saw back then. The data that A&M researchers collected revealed a number of crucial facts. First among them was that the Dallas Fort Worth full-service brokers achieved an average sale price that was almost 2% higher than the sale price achieved by the limited service brokers. Well, we all know that as real estate professionals, right? You know your value. You know you can not only market and negotiate better so as to get your client more money. Although this may not sound like a major difference at 2%, right, it really translates to an additional $3,000, $4,000 in a sales price, which to any seller that you talk to, they wouldn't think that was a small feat, right? So the study also looked at days on the market, and the data showed that limited service providers took an average of 17% longer to place a home under contract. Full service brokers took an average of 90 days to sell a home, while limited service brokers at the time took an average of 105. The conclusion basically reached in the study was that any commission savings offered by the limited service brokers was basically eliminated by their lower average sale price and longer time on market. You guys, this is a script for you, right? This is what you should be talking to and saying to your clients when you're up against this type of brokerage. In addition, time on the market often translates to an additional expense and stress for the seller. For all these reasons, it would appear that full service brokers delivered the best overall value for their customers. So a year later, Keller Williams International actually broadened and expanded the A&M study, and they evaluated extensive MLS research data from that same time frame. And the study examined 1.32 million real estate transactions in about 10 random, you know, U.S. markets and focused on single-family and townhome residential transactions. And basically, they identified the top five full-service brokers in each of those selected markets and then compared the business operations of those full-service brokers to the operations of the top five limited service brokers in the same markets. And the study guidelines established basically very specific criteria that defined limited service companies. To qualify, a company must have communicated their reduced commission as part of their value proposition and featured their reduced commission in their advertising. Only companies that met these criteria were included in the study. And the study of the 1.32 million transactions in 10 markets reached almost the same conclusion as the Texas A&M study. The top full-service broker firms achieved a sale price of 1.5% higher than the sales price attained by the limited brokers, and on average in that market, or those markets combined, was almost $5,000 net more to the consumer. And the study also evaluated the time homes for sale stayed on the market before going under contract, and they found that the homes listed by limited service brokers took 36 days or 20% longer to go under contract compared to homes listed by the full service brokers, which averaged 30 days to go under contract. So both studies reached the conclusion that the average full service provider produces more for the seller than a limited service provider, both in actual sales dollars and in fewer days on the market. And so the study went a step further than A&M study, however, and researched listing expirations to determine if a home was more likely or less likely to sell during its listing period based on the type of service provider. And the study found that a home listed by a limited service provider was 36% less likely to sell during the listing period than a home listed with a full service provider. So the study also analyzed the data on market share, how it was achieved by limited service companies. So the study revealed some very surprising data about market share changes. On average, during that time frame, the top five full-service firms across 10 markets lost 6% of their market share, while the top five limited service firms increased their market share by 41%. Sounds like a major shift in market share. In reality, some limited service brokers had slightly more market share than others, but as whole, they had only about 2.6%, which was still a very tiny sliver of the overall real estate market. So when you compare that first quarter to the last quarter of that time frame that they did this data, there was an even more marked difference in market share. So the top five Full-service companies in the 10 market studies lost 9% market share, while the top five limited increased by 90%. So while market share for these limited service firms remains relatively small, their share of the market still almost doubled in 2 years at the time. It was an incredible feat in any market, and it was worth attempting to understand how these companies accomplished the change. And so you need to note that obviously the changes in the market share reflect rapid growth, and that was a time where the market was really moving quickly, kind of like it is today. It changed, obviously, between that 2007-2008 timeframe up until just a few years ago, of course. So if the growth trend had continued to grow at that pace, you know, it would be possible that it would have more of like a 5% market share by 2008-2009, but that didn't happen because when the market changed, the people, the consumer, knew that they needed the full service brokerage. So the point of this is in different types of markets, obviously things are going to change, not only in the market and how you need to price properties and how you need to talk to consumers, but you also need to understand that your competition changes when market changes as well. That's the point here, right? So historically, when markets boom, many companies start up, making promises to deliver competitive services at low prices, right? And these low-priced companies try to shift the focus on of the real estate business to price rather than service. And it works for a temporary period of time, right? But since the real estate markets tend to be cyclical, many of the industry feels that the current changes and the changes back then, they just resolved themselves, and they did. Because, again, as the market changed, people didn't want to work with the low-service, limited-service low-priced companies any longer. They knew that they needed experts to help them get their homes sold in a tougher market. So that's really important. And so experience teaches us that a company or concept that captures a market increase does deserve attention. It might not stay there for long term, but it deserves your attention as a professional in the industry because the company or concept starts to gain mind share amongst the consumer. And so when that happens, that becomes more of your competition when you're out meeting with clients, right? If limited service firms are essentially doing kind of the same thing by putting price in their marketing and trying to create dialogue about pricing with consumers, there's a possibility that they could capture a percentage of your consumer mind share, right? And so when the market cycles back, though, then limited services will lose their momentum. But in that time frame when they have momentum, you need to be taking it seriously because that could be your reality that you're up against that competition. Use these statistics that I'm talking about right now to help you show your seller, your buyer, why they want to work with you because the reality is they're focusing on price, but the time on market and the price that they're actually going to get on average through these studies shows that they're not even saving them any money. At the end of the day, you're probably on an even playing field, yet you're going to get their property sold faster in least amount of time with least amount of hassle is really what a seller wants, right? And so it's just important for you to understand that that's kind of understanding the markets and understanding that with the markets changing and the shifting, just like you worry about that and you think about that in your business, you think about it more, I think, a lot of times as a real estate professional, how it's going to affect. Is it a buyer's market? Is it a seller's market? What are my strategies? How do I find my business and my leads? How do I go out there and get my market share? But it's important for you to understand how the real estate markets actually change and how some of your competition can ebb and flow and what those scripts are you need to be using against those when you're up against that competition in different markets as well. So let's move into industry perceptions and realities, right? So at that same time, the average real estate commissions were on the decline. I think then again, the market shifted, and that was because the market was shifting and people didn't have a lot of money in their properties and people needed to sell. And so there were some concessions made, which a lot of it probably necessary for all of us to kind of move through and survive through that market. Again, that's cyclical. And the reality is that we want you to be able to feel no matter what, that you can keep the value up so that you can get the money that you deserve because regardless of the market, you're still working hard, you're still spending money, and you need to run. At the end of the day, you need to run a profitable business. The point of business is to fund the perfect life, right? If it's not profitable, it's just not worth having. We all know that. It's not about being greedy. It's about knowing that you're doing something to help people, but you have to make a living at it too. Otherwise, you can't help others, right? You first have to help yourself and your family before you can help others. And so it's just important for you to understand what can happen when different changes in the market happen, and then what happens to the commissions at that same time. And so the perception and is not always the same as the reality, but you need to be prepared for that as you're talking to the consumer, right? Of course. So what's interesting is that there was a study done, Keller Williams did another study about industry perceptions and realities and about average commissions at that same time. And again, I'm talking about this right now because the market at that time is very similar to the market it is today, and we know that markets are cyclical. So I think regardless of the fact that this study and these some of these stats were done back in the early parts of 2000, it's very similar to the market we're in today. And so you can relate to this, and a lot of this still holds true in a market like we're seeing today with low inventory, multiple offers, prices going up, et cetera. Because the typical consumer perception is that real estate commissions average 6%, but during those times when those limited service brokers come out, there's more competition, there's more realtors out there, there's people getting back into the business, more competition. Homes are selling fast so that those companies can come in there and say, look, all we're going to have to do is put a sign in your yard anyway and your property is going to sell. Why do you want to pay 6%, right? The consumer's perception will be that the average commission is 6% because of that movement in the market. Real estate commissions will actually decline. Now, they'll change again because, again, the market's cyclical. But what can you do to hold on to your value during that time? And that's just something that you need to make sure that you talk about and you work through as a business owner. So the average commissions at that time had fallen like 5.5% in the early 2000s because of kind of what was happening in the market. And with Keller Williams, they were showing there was a decline of about 5%. And so the decline paralleled that of the industry just generally overall, and the internal studies show that there was an incredible variance from agent to agent and from transaction to transaction in terms of the percentage of commissions charged, and that's what's interesting here. The study presents clear evidence that there's no fixed commission rate in the real estate industry at all, period, really, and the perception of a standard rate of 6% commission in our industry is just a very common misperception nationwide. In fact, the real estate industry is phenomenally competitive and doesn't have set pricing. And so Keller Williams reviewed 350,000 transactions in various regions of their company, and it indicated that no region averaged a 3% commission on the seller side at all, really, when it was an average. And so this misperception holds true for transactions on the buyer side as well, because also when they did some statistical analysis, the buyer side commissions were higher. There was no KW region that averaged more of 3% commission on the buy side either. The most dramatic comparison showed up when you start to group regions. There's more variation of commission and rates based on regions within the country, right? And so the United States Bureau of Economic Analysis kind of divides the country into regions that are grouped together primarily based on their economic characteristics. So all transactions in the various economic regions were combined. And once again, there were no regions where at an average commission were more than 3% on either on the seller side, and only one region averaged above 2.5 on the seller side at all. So while the commission rates are slightly higher on the buyer side, no region averaged 3% on either. So the battle over commissions is really being fought in terms of the marketing around the listing side, really. And so they had grouped the 30 Keller Williams regions, according to average sell price, into three groups, low, medium, and high. And there was a significant difference in commissions. The low end of the price range had a higher commission rate but a lower commission dollar amount. In the middle of the price range, the commission rates came down a little bit, and the dramatic switches in the high end of the price range where the commission percentage was significantly lower, but the commission dollar amount per sale, of course, was significantly higher because of the average sale price. So in other words, commission rate, the percentage of sales price charged goes down according to the selling price. At the same time, the commission amount, the commission dollars earned, increases with the selling price. And that's what they saw across the country. So when you look at the average commission on the seller side, you can again see that the commission goes down as the price goes up. And the same thing again holds true for the buyer side. When you look at commissions paid by the buyer and seller together based on the price of transactions, the trend is virtually parallel, edging just slightly higher on the buyer side. So while 6% does happen for all intents and purposes, it's kind of a myth when you look at it nationally. The average transaction just doesn't earn 6% commission rate. And so I think back in the 2005 range, which we would see is probably pretty similar here, the average transaction earned about 5.06% average commission rate. So this is a common misconception that agents who get the most listings do so because they charge less. Agents who list more do not charge less. They are charging at least the average of what everyone else is charging, and in 67% of the cases, they actually got a higher rate. So what is interesting about this is that you shouldn't believe that people who do a lot of volume are doing it because they're discounting their services or their commissions. That is not the fact. In fact, The reality was, again, in over half of the cases, they were getting more than the national average when we looked at top producers. So what about agents who closed more than 100 seller sides? Do they charge more or less? The agents who closed 100 or more transactions on the seller side averaged right at average. 67% of agents that completed 100 or more transactions were above the average commission. So that is interesting to know. There is no real correlation between listing productivity and commission rate received at all. The most accurate indicator of commission rate received is the local average sales price and market competitive conditions, period. That's what it is. So the study data showed that across all price ranges and markets, commission rates tend to be higher on the buyer side than the seller side, which is interesting. Commission rates were also more likely to be lower as the price of the homes increased. And so it's just important for you to understand this, because a lot of people, when I coach them, they say all the time, well, there must be something that these other agents are doing to be so competitive that they're listing so many property. That's not the case. And it's important to understand what strategy will result in long-term success for you, right? And that is why we're talking about this, because if you have those misconceptions in your mind, you're going to go about your business in the wrong way. You need to get paid what you're worth, you guys, and by delivering customer value at a high level, articulating it, and knowing what your value is, and then understanding value pricing, that's what's going to get you paid for what you do and what you deserve. So I wanted to just go through that in terms of what you need to do and what you need to think about in terms of your pricing. So this is interesting, flexible pricing strategies. So did the pricing strategy the listing agents employed measurably impact the average commission rate they received? When they did the study, they identified that top agents who employed a flexible pricing strategy where their commission rate achieved was tied to the outcomes they achieved for their customers, that they actually were achieving more than the other agents in their market. So the common perception was that flexible pricing agents might be receiving a lower commission rate and making less money, but the reality is that when the top 10 flexible pricing agents study were compared to other agents in their market, that they actually took an average of 131 listings while the other agents took 6, and the agents using flexible pricing achieved an average sell price of 34% higher than the non-flexible pricing agents, and the flexible pricing agents' commission was 4% more than the non-flexible pricing agents. So what's even more significant is the dollar amount earned by the flexible pricing agents was 39% more than the amount earned by the non-flexible pricing agents. So the data proved that agents with a flexible pricing strategy made more in every case than the agents in their market without a flexible pricing strategy. So on average, flexible pricing agents earned more, like I said, and eight out of 10 of the flexible pricing agents had a higher commission rate. 10 out of 10 agents who used flexible pricing earned a higher commission dollar, and 10 out of 10 flexible pricing agents had a higher average home sale price across the board. So here's some key observations. And if you don't know what flexible pricing is, that just means basically, you guys, you might have a tiered commission structure. You have flexibility. You're not just going in with just a 5% or a 6% or a 7%. It's tiered. It's based on different criteria that you have established for your business with your marketing plan and the expectations for your seller. We can talk about that more if you'd like to in a personal coaching session, because there are a variety of different ways that you can actually create that that flexible pricing and commission structure. And so let me know if you want to talk more about that. I think most of you, if you're in the industry, kind of have seen that, have heard about that, do it yourself, understand it. But it is a really, as you're hearing here, it can be a very powerful technique to help you earn the money that you deserve and keep that pricing strategy in a place where it's flexible enough so that you can get more listings, you can negotiate the right sales price, and you can actually get paid more money. So the key observations of this flexible pricing strategy study that Keller Williams had done is that the data was that revealed that the leverage point in developing a higher level business is getting listings, right? And that's what these flexible pricing agents did. It allowed them to get more listings. It also revealed that the average agent doesn't appear to focus on listings. Well, that's why they're an average agent and they're not a top producer. So if your focus is on being flexible, more often than not, your commission rate will be higher than average. There are times when it will be lower, of course, but most of the time it will be higher. So flexibility is the best strategy for competing with limited service providers and driving up listing volume. The study showed that a flexible pricing strategy allowed agents to stay competitive and acquire the needed listings to drive their business to the desired level. Flexible pricing appeals to consumers who feel they are getting a better value and more individualized service. So one question we've not answered is whether or not a prominent flexible pricing marketing plan has a downward impact on the commission rate for the rest of the market or the market in general. And it really suggested that agents who were prepared to have a conversation about pricing achieved the highest commission rates and captured more listings. And agents who were not prepared or just avoided the whole conversation did not appear to fare as well. So whether you're flexible or not, the point is you need to be prepared to discuss the value you offer and how that relates to your pricing. And so keep in mind, the data shows that the most pressing issue facing the real estate industry is not pricing, it's marketing. We don't believe that there's a pricing problem in the industry. It's a marketing challenge. Competitors who are marketing-based are on price have gained the attention of media and through their marketing campaigns. The truth is that real estate is competitive, but it's also flexible. Consumers initially respond with interest to low-price marketing messages of discount marketers. And that low-price message encourages them to believe that they will save money by using this limited service provider, but the perception of consumers is that full-service brokers are the highest-priced option, while limited service brokers are the lowest-priced option. However, both Keller Williams and Texas A&M studies clearly showed that full-service agents provide the best value for what they charge. So we just need to use the results of these studies to educate consumers and help make them to make an informed decision, right? The real estate industry is not being outpriced. It's being outmarketed on price by competitors gaining media attention. And that happens as the market shifts, like one we're in right now, where it is a seller's market. So the industry is being positioned or has been positioned as the highest priced option, while others are marketing themselves as the lowest price option. So limited service brokers, while marketing themselves as the lowest price option, are actually getting consumers to pay more. And the discount competitors use their lowest price point as an incentive to consumers to get that appointment. So you just need to understand that so you know how to market against it and you know how to combat it when you are up against that competition in an appointment. Aggressive marketing and positioning messages may get you the best market share. Flexible pricing may get you the best commission rate. Full service gives the consumer the best results, a quicker sale, a higher sales price, and a higher likelihood of selling. Which strategy will get you more appointments? A strategy that combines full service and flexible pricing ultimately gives the consumer the best results, a quicker sale, a higher sales price. With this approach, the listing is also more likely to sell during the listing period. And a strategy that combines full service and flexible pricing may actually give you, the agent, the best results as well, more appointments and a higher average commission rate, right? When developing your marketing strategy, always put service first and then develop your pricing strategy. Always focus on delivering outstanding service, which is your primary competitive advantage. Price or fee then becomes less of an issue to potential customers, and that is absolutely a fact. So in the next session of Coaching with Carrie, next Friday here at 11 a.m. Central Standard Time, we're going to wrap up this series, and we're going to finish it with competitive marketing. And so how can you continue to, again, price appropriately, be up against this competition in different markets, continue to provide that high level of service, and what do you need to do to position yourself as that full service, high-priced option and get that consumer mind share and get those appointments and earn what you deserve and provide the best service because of it. And that's what we're going to talk about in our last session. It's going to be all about competitive marketing. I think you'll enjoy it. Join me back here next Friday, 11 a.m. Central Standard Time, live on Blog Talk Radio on Coaching with Carrie. Thanks so much, you guys. Look forward to talking to you then. Make it a great weekend.